In today's show, I chat with Dr. Ashika Pile. Ashika is passionate about helping her patients reach their full potential and live happy and fulfilling lives. She's a functional medicine doctor, corporate executive coach, and mindfulness teacher. With over 25 years of experience in the field, she intimately understands the unique challenges of corporate life while bringing up a family. Stress is an unavoidable and often necessary part of life. In this episode, we unpack how to make stress work in your favor and what to do before it all gets overwhelming. This episode is brought to you by Salal. In today's show, we are focusing on managing the implications of stress on body and mind. Salal's product range includes unique formulations that combine pharmaceutical-grade active nutritional ingredients and plant extracts that target the negative effects of stress. Specifically, herbal ingredients that help manage the effects of extreme fatigue, stubborn weight gain, mild depression, and sleeplessness. Salal's stress damage control formula will help you manage the effects of stress and protect your heart and brain. So Dr. Ashika Pile, thank you so much for joining me today on the Reinvent Health podcast. And what we're here to speak about is something that everybody is subject to, so should I say nobody's immune to, and that is stress. But I think what, you know, we all come across people in our lives, family, friends, colleagues, and even ourselves, and we feel overwhelmed so often. And there's got to be more to life than this. So I thought what we could do today is really break it down for people and start helping anyone listening to reframe what they're experiencing as stress in sort of in an effort to help anybody who's really battling or just feels like they're dealing with so much overwhelm and they don't know where to turn.
Yeah, great. No, thank you so much for inviting me. It's such a pleasure to be here. And I definitely agree with you. I mean, no one is immune from stress. And actually, you know, it does beg the question is, you know, is stress not part of life? Yeah. So I'm so excited to be here and to examine this topic with you from various angles. And hopefully it's of real benefit to your listeners. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Such a pleasure. So let's start off with what is stress? What causes stress? Is stress bad? Let's get to the sort of the basis of what this thing called stress really is and how we experience it.
Yeah, you know, stress is it's a tough one because as much as we know what stress is, we can feel it in our bodies. And anyone that's experienced stress, which is probably all 8 billion people on planet Earth, you know, knows what it feels like. And yet we may be confused about what it really is. So, you know, in my view, stress is really about adapting the inability to adapt to changing circumstances around you. And what do I mean by that? So many times, you know, we kind of are fixated on how things should be. We get into a situation, you know, we may be in the traffic even, and we think, oh, I'm just going to put my Google Maps on and I'm going to get to where I need to get to in 25 minutes. And suddenly all hell breaks loose. There's something on the road and, you know, now your commute is 40 minutes. So you went in there, you had a predictable idea of what was going to happen. The environment changed and even saw you taking a deep breath there just thinking about that. Yes, because suddenly you're like, oh my word, what do I do with this? And when we feel out of control, when we feel a sense of what would be the consequences of this, our bodies kind of go into either fright, flight, freeze, or fawn. So those are the kind of four different responses. And we can note the external environment changing, and yet the inside of us doesn't want to change because we have this fixed view of how things should be. In fact, you know, there's many clinical definitions of stress. And the one that I actually love the most and I use a lot in my presentations is the one by Eckhart Tolle, who actually says that stress is about being here, but wanting to be there.
Right.
So in the situation of finding yourself in the car, you're thinking, I am here, but I actually don't want to be here. So there's a resistance about the present moment. There's a wish that it was a different way. And of course, that affects our physiology. because we start to activate all the sorts of different hormones, and our nervous system changes, and that brings out the physiological response to stress. So I don't know, does that kind of add some light to a maybe different opinion on stress?
Yeah, and I think everyone can relate to that. I mean, I speak for myself when, I mean, that's exactly what happens is we really have an idea in our minds of how things should be. And there are, like you say, 8 billion other people who've also got an idea in their minds of how everything should be. And it can't possibly synchronize. So yeah, that at the core, and why do you think is it a thing that we are just innately wired to try and control for everything? How does it come about that we are so trying to control the environment, and to what end?
You know, in the kind of mindfulness circles and in the Buddhist philosophy, we talk about what causes suffering in human beings. And actually, the Buddha was the one who talked about this in great detail. And what he says is that we are always striving, we're always holding on to reaching for something. And we want to be in a state where we are in control. And that's what actually causes us suffering. It's either the striving, the reaching for something, or the opposite, which is the inability to let go. The inability to release. And you know, we can go at this from many different angles, physiological, kind of more mindfulness-based approaches, etc. But you know, the bottom line is that we do feel a lack of sense of the sense of control, number one. And the other thing that could come into play is the perception of a threat. So, for example, when you're sitting in that car and you think, oh my gosh, 40 minutes, the spin-off thought could be, what will they think of me if I arrive late? What will my manager say? Am I going to be on a performance management process now because this is the third time, or whatever? So there's a perception of threat and danger. There's an inability to control an uncontrollable situation. There's a striving for I want things to be a different way. You know, there are many other causes, but I'll stop there.
Okay, so if it's our nature to strive and control, we're kind of built, it's like an inbuilt glitch, because it's those two innate tendencies that is causing more damage to our. So I think what I'm hearing is there's an invitation to think different, do different, and almost step away from how we're wired to live life optimally. But that's a huge challenge. So, yeah, how do we get that right? How do we start by, what do we start doing to start almost reframing the way we see the world so that we can have less damage caused by the way we are in the world? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, if we, I think we all know it in our minds, but we probably are, don't really feel comfortable practicing it. But you know, the one thing that's helped me explain this differently in some of my workshops is something we call the cognitive behavioral triangle. The cognitive behavioral triangle is really about looking at where does the feeling and where's the sensation of stress or any other thing, for it's not limited to stress in particular. But the way it works, or the way I've explained it in the past, is that we think a certain thought, and that thought has a downstream impact on us, and that creates an emotion. So emotion is what we feel. It's a physical thing. It's about how our bodies are responding to that particular thought. And the next part of that triangle is behavior. So we think a certain thought, we have a certain emotion, and it results in a different behavior. And you know, there's been a lot of work done on this, and I'll refer you to some books, for example. So when you think about emotions, how long do you think an emotion lasts?
Probably seconds. It feels quite transitory. So you have a thought and it becomes an instant flash in your body or in your mind. You have a very visceral reaction to something, but it doesn't kind of doesn't last long.
It doesn't last long, and one would then wonder, how is it possible that some people could be stressed or remain angry for
Yeah.
decades?
Yeah,
And that's
that's a good question. Yeah.
so, the research so shows, and there's a great book by a psychologist called Joan Rosenberg called The 90-Second Reset. And what she says is that there's that cognitive behavioral triangle, thought, emotion, behavior. But what powers that loop for days, months? I mean, you could remain angry with your partner for a week.
Forever. Yeah.
Or some, person in your circle. And that's because we keep powering that triangle. Thought,
Okay.
emotion, behavior, thought, emotion, you keep ruminating. And it keeps circling, and
Right.
the release of the hormones is in, kind of in that way. So, the I suppose it, I'm answering your question in a bit of a long-winded way. While this may not particularly or only apply to stress, it applies to emotional well-being in general. Stress is really about getting our mindsets right. It's about how we think about stress, and it's about becoming a little bit of a curious investigator about what
Yes.
drives our stress.
So the thing that comes to mind when you say we have a thought, it becomes an emotion and that becomes a behavior, wouldn't it be the reasonable? I'm saying reasonable because no one's reasonable in the moment. The reasonable thing to do is to ask if that thought is true. Do I have evidence for this thought? And I mean, I'm a great example. I have ridiculous thoughts all day long that drive emotion, and 90%, and I'm not kidding, 90% of them are absolutely nonsensical. They're based in no evidence, but they create discomfort. And I often sit and think I am actually the orchestra of my own misery sometimes because none of this is actually based in reality. And to ask, keep asking, is this thought based in reality? Is it true? And it's quite a thing to do that because in the moment, no one asks that question.
No one asked that question because the stress response is a reaction versus a response. So the stress response is there as a protective mechanism when you think about it. The nature of the human mind is that we are wired for negativity. 80% of the thoughts we think every day are negative. And that is not something that, we should kind of berate ourselves or be unkind to ourselves about, because it was that way as a protective mechanism to be able to see threat in our environment. Because in the days of, when we were not living in, homes, when we were, kind of maybe out in a forest or a savanna or wherever, we had to, every little rustle could mean a threat to your physical danger. And as a result, the mind goes there. It starts to spin in
Sure.
that way, into that negative way of thinking. So we have to be conscious of the type of thoughts that we're having. And you are naming something that's very wise already, which is, how do we move from that reaction to responsiveness?
Yes.
And between the two is choice.
And it's really tough. I don't know anyone who gets that right. I don't think anyone gets it right all the time, but just I think it's critical for our survival. But just to a point that you mentioned earlier, if we have a negativity bias and this is really created to keep us safe, which it is, and we're so inundated with so much information all day long from unsolicited origins, and we choose willingly to go, and I'm going to use social media as an example. We choose to delve into very unsolicited commentary, for example, and we choose to listen to and expose ourselves to things that will trigger that negativity bias. Is it any surprise that people are feeling worse and worse about themselves. Is it any surprise that we're seeing a mental health crisis if our if we are triggering this very basic wiring in the human brain? It's actually a disaster of our own making again.
Exactly. And yet at the same time, we are never victims to our environments.
Of course.
So for me, consciousness is about awakeness. And awakeness is really about having the awareness of what's happening to me. I mean, for example, you're describing this is what happens to me on a daily basis. That's already a level of awakeness. It's about saying, do I want to be in this loop, this spiral, this downward spiral? And how do I become more effective? Number one. Number two, more choiceful. And number three, about taking leadership of my life. I am not at the mercy of social media. I
Yeah,
literally have
absolutely.
the power to put that button off or remove myself or be choiceful
Right.
about the amount of time that we spend. So the core tenets, for example, of mindfulness is about, the first one is about intention. And the second one is about awareness, and the third is about attention. So when we have an intention to change the way we are in the world, when we can say, I want to have more of being, a being state in the world rather than a doing state, then that means we have the choice to reorganize our lives, right,
Yes.
around that. What are the intentional strategies that you have to start to slow down? What are the
Yeah.
intentional strategies that you have to start to get still? Because it's in the slowing down and the stillness that we have this thing called meta-awareness.
Right.
Meta-awareness is something unique to human beings, where we become aware of our thinking. We're not stuck in the thinking. We can literally take a step back and look, or flip, look at how I reacted in that situation. That was like really hectic. So we have the capacity to say, I want to, this is the way I want to live my life in a different way. It's not to say that we're going to stop getting triggered, because this work is a lifelong journey of personal mastery. And it's about saying that, can I start to strengthen the muscles that's required for a positive way of being in the world, a less reactive way of being in the world, a more grounded, intentional of be way of being in the world, rather than spinning in other people's stories, for example, Instagram and WhatsApps and whatever. And how do I take control and really become more intentional about the boundaries I set around myself, and what are the practices I'm going to engage in to start to build that muscle? Because, like you've got the muscle of reactivity that's really hardwired into you, the equal and opposing force is the muscle of being more in control, more in a place of beingness, and more responsive to the world rather than the reactive. So I don't know, I've kind of said a lot. I hope I'm not waffling.
Oh no, this is wonderful. There's so many topics we can dig into there. So the first thing that comes to mind is, when we are working in an organization and there's a lot of different personalities and there's a lot of different agenda and there is a lot of conflict, or you're in a relationship where everyone's swimming in a different direction. It's so difficult to step back and to be pragmatic about the situation and to ask yourself these difficult questions. And very often, I'm sure you see it with your coaching clients, I see it with mine, is everyone is talking about how everybody else in their lives is the cause of their distress. And if only so and so, my boss, my husband, my wife would change. No one changes. The only thing that we can control is how we can respond to them. And when we change our response, we change them anyway, because they're not going to get what they're needing or used to getting from us as a response to their action. So I think, what you're saying is that's where you take your power back, is the only person you can change is you and the way you think about a situation. And it's powerful, but it's tricky. And how do we, you've already mentioned so many ways that we can start thinking differently, but how does somebody practically who has not been taught, hasn't been exposed to any kind of resource in mindfulness and self-awareness, what are the first steps somebody can take, even a young person, in just starting this process in not trying to change the world, focus on you?
Yeah, obviously a really big question, and
Sure.
I think the bottom line is the and the answer to it is already what you've mentioned, which is the only person you can change is yourself, and that is a layered approach. The first question is really about what is in my control in the situation.
Right.
So the bottom line of corporates, for example, is that there are so many multiple forces acting on an individual from all different levels. And
Yeah.
yet at the same time, they are part of a system where they can start to change the chemistry of how they interact with people. What
Yeah.
am I actually in control here? What is happening? I mean, it was Viktor Frankl's famous words, I think that I absolutely love, which says between stimulus and response is a space. And it's
Yes.
in that space that is my freedom. And I think I'm butchering the quote a bit, but it's in that space that's my freedom to choose. So the
Yes.
first thing that I even say during my talks is that you have absolutely no control of the world, and
Right.
yet you have all the control. Because in any given situation, you can decide by taking a step back,
Yeah.
by looking at things in a different way, taking a pause, you go from reactive to responsive. And then you say, what is really in my control here? Can I
Right.
change how I perceive things? Whose help do I need? Oftentimes, personal resources can be quite limited because people feel they've got to do it all themselves. And yet,
Oh, yes.
yeah. So you have so many resources available to you because, there's a very, very simplistic definition of well-being, which says that well-being is the balance of challenge versus resource. When the challenge goes high and the resources go low, we start to go from stress to burnout, and because, it's over a prolonged period of time. But the resources is how do we start to resource ourselves in order to
Yes.
deal with the challenges in a more holistic way. So, for example, we could start examining our thinking. What am I in control of? The second thing is we've got to start looking at ourselves. If we're not
Yeah.
eating well, and you are the guru of this, if we're not nourishing our brains, our guts, our bodies, if we are not exercising, if we're not sleeping
Yeah.
and resting, and if we're not breathing and regulating our nervous system, we're already under-resourced. So, there's that age-old saying that says, try, we actually often say to ourselves, let me sleep on it. And many a problem has been solved after a good night's sleep. And I think
Absolutely.
you may have seen quite a few of my posts on LinkedIn as well about sleep. Because sleep
Yes.
is the is if there's one element of your well-being that you can start to get yourself more resourced, it's sleep. It firstly it changes our biochemistry, it changes our hormonal systems, it gets our hormones in more balance, it gets us to start to manage our memory and emotions in a more holistic manner. You've often seen a 2-year-old throwing tantrums because they didn't sleep. And we are all,
Exactly.
in a way, throwing our own tantrums because the sleep epidemic or the lack of sleep epidemic is a huge one in the
Yes.
world.
It's
So
massive.
we've got to ask ourselves the question, how resourced am I? And what do
Yes.
I need to deal with this challenge that I have?
Yes.
One of the other things which has kind of been a little bit in a way groundbreaking around the concept of stress has been, we mentioned earlier that what causes stress, one of the things that causes it is unpredictability, and the second one, threat. But
Right.
can we frame ourselves to firstly say that stress is not always bad?
Exactly. It's motivating in the right context.
Number two, can we shift that mindset from threat to challenge?
Yes.
So rather than I'm sitting in the car, 25 minutes change to 40 minutes, I'm in threat, which means I'm all locked in, everything starts to lock up, brain goes into freeze, suddenly danger from all sides, you've like predicted your imminent departure from this company, being marched out because you're 10
Yes.
minutes late, all of that,
Craziness.
catastrophizing in your brain. Rather, if we took a step breath back, if we took a breath that regulates our bodies, and we go, hang on, how might I see this as a challenge versus a threat? So it's
I love that reframe.
questions like that where we can start to take back our control. Because remember, in that state of stress that you were describing, what is practical for the ordinary person dealing with challenge in their workplace? It doesn't happen automatically. The intention is important. The exploration and the self-inquiry is important. The looking at resources is important. And then the reframing of the stress could be something that helps us unlock, more options for us to deal with situations.
Absolutely. Did you know that unmanaged stress accelerates mental and physical aging? This episode is sponsored by Salal. You can find a wide range of Salal supplements that have been specifically designed to help you manage the stress response more effectively by balancing neurotransmitter stimulation and promoting adrenal regulation. Salal's ashwagandha extract reduces stress by lowering dopamine receptor levels and plasma corticosterone, creating a sense of calm. This is something I think we all need. You can find Salal supplements everywhere that you purchase premium quality health products. And all these points that you've made, I think it's a case of just practicing, just slowly asking the questions. You become good at asking more questions and being able to pause before response. The more you do it, the better at it you become. And I know you've got kids. I've got a daughter, and it just makes me think about their social situations and how entrapped they become in drama, but they love it so much. And everyone's arguing and fighting, and there's no pause between stimulus and response. And wouldn't it be such a superpower to be able to get young people to understand this concept that they actually have it in them not to respond when something feels like a threat to them? And start building that part of the brain from early on. What incredible adults we would be creating in the future, people who could be just a little bit more in touch with what's going on and that they don't have to participate.
And I think, you're naming a hugely important segment of our society that are really kind of in the whirlwind of social media and technology. And, the practices around that are so hugely important. In fact, a personal story to you is that my youngest son is 15 and he's at a 25-day camp as we speak. He's on kind of day 2020 probably by now. He's coming home on Wednesday, on Tuesday. But the beauty of this is that these boys, there's 80 of them that go away to the bush to a massive farm in Modimolle, all devices left behind. They've got to cook for themselves. There's obviously great supervision, and they're in like eight different clans. They've got to cook for themselves. There's no phones, nothing. There's just nature, themselves, and learning basic skills. And I think to myself, what a gift this is to be able to switch this off and to be able to take yourself back. Because that's what that is. So, for the younger people, and for our teenagers, the impact of things like TikTok and all of these mini short videos that we have, it's actually impacting our attention span. So bringing and inviting stillness to them is hugely important. And I sometimes say, I watch kind of, I can imagine eyes rolling when I say this in my workshops, where people go like, really, do I have the time to sit down and breathe? And I say to them, you know what? Make it a group activity. You've got a little 2, 3, 4 year old child. Sit with them, and there's a very practical thing called breathe like a frog. So you sit with them and you say, okay, now we're just going to get still. We're going to sit for 2 minutes and you're just going to breathe and you're going to make your belly go big like a frog. And then you're going to make it release. And big like a frog and make it release. So intentional practices of breathing, apps like Headspace, they love apps, right? They love this gamification of things. And I have my eldest son has actually been hugely invested in his practice of Headspace because it gives you these streaks of, unbroken streaks or whatever. I mean, I don't use Headspace as a meditation practice, but the stillness and the inviting of it is as important. And that for me is the chemistry change of things, because you can see it. I can see it. I often practice, with my clients in a session, and we do literally a 3 minute practice, and suddenly they're like, I feel completely different.
And it costs nothing to sit still and breathe for 3 minutes. The solutions for most of our problems are freely available to us. Sleep, sunshine, friends, breathing, good food. Well, food to an extent is free, but yeah. I mean, movement, that's definitely free. So, yeah, but we always, we try and complicate things. And again, I think it's just our human wiring. It has to be tough. It has to be complicated. It has to cost money. And none of those statements are true. And that's, I think, maybe a statement we need to ask. Is this thought real? Can we just pop back to recovery? Because I know that you're quite familiar with heart rate variability, with heart math. I'd like to really explain to our audience what heart rate variability is and why it's so important to perhaps look at this for a metric to understand whether or not you're recovering and the risk profiles that are associated with low heart rate variability. What sort of, I mean, there's disease profiles that are even associated with not getting enough recovery. This is a real thing. Can you enlighten us as to what that really
Yeah,
means?
sure. I mean, I think so I actually did the heart math coach certification a couple of years ago. And what I loved about it is that it's a biofeedback mechanism. And sometimes this can also be a bit of a trap because people get fixated into like, oh, what is that? What is that app? What is that little device I need or whatever? But you don't need anything. You don't need devices, you don't need apps, you need nothing. You need simply yourself. And heart rate variability is really about the beat-to-beat variability between your heartbeats, which is actually not supposed to be as regular as you would think it would be, because it indicates a physiological inflexibility. So you want your heart rate variability to be kind of more, variable, so that it shows that you are responding to the environment in a certain way. And I suppose the groundbreaking science of heart math has been that what they've shown really is that we used to think of the brain and the heart as this one-way highway. We sometimes are so in our heads that we believe that this body is just the locomotive organ for the head and that we are our brains and our minds. And we used to think there's this one-way highway, and subsequently we've obviously the research has shown that there's actually more nervous system information coming from the heart upwards and the gut upwards. The second brain is actually considered in our guts, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. The heart itself has many efferent nerves that goes towards the brain itself, and there's actually something called the heart brain. They say they've located it, but it literally is the nervous system around the heart. And the second
Right.
thing to note from a physiological perspective is that we have this 10th cranial nerve, the vagus nerve, which is the only nerve that travels down from the base of your brain down to the tip of your tailbone. And this is the nervous system that gets us to move from that accelerate nervous system, so the one that pumps all the cortisol, the adrenaline, all of that. And I often call that the accelerator system. And the parasympathetic, the one that's kind of controlled or facilitated by the vagus nerve, is the braking system. So, for example, when we take a deep breath, what happens is we increase the intrathoracic pressure in our chests, and this activates that parasympathetic nervous system tone to increase. It changes the hormonal chemistry of your body. And we all know this because when you take a breath, what happens? You like feel totally different because you've engaged, you've disengaged the accelerate, and you've engaged the braking system. So HeartMath has one particular technique called heart-focused breathing. And heart-focused breathing is really about moving your awareness to your chest, breathing into your heart, making the inhale and the exhale the same for a couple of breaths. And what that does to your heart rate variability, it goes from this chaotic rhythm. If you can imagine, something looking really like a earthquake
All over.
feature, and we go into a very, very elegant sinusoidal rhythm. And we bring our hearts and our brains into coherence. That's why it's called coherence. And automatically we feel a bit different. We can feel more gratitude, more connected. We feel more clearer about the way we think. And this is why I sometimes say, when you talk about what are those steps, the first step, I call it the C-suite. The first step of the C-suite is calm. We cannot operate from a place of being dysregulated. When we bring calmness into our bodies, clarity into our brains, suddenly we have the ability to be courageous, asking the questions.
Love it.
We have the ability to be connected to ourselves. What am I thinking here? What's really happening? We go from disembodied in the brain to more embodied in our bodies. We can be more compassionate to others, compassionate to ourselves. And there are many other C's which are now going out of my brain. But the bottom line is heart rate variability is one way of helping us calm our nervous systems and bring that CEO, the prefrontal cortex of our brains, back online.
That is so powerful. And again, it's something that's available to anybody. You don't need a special degree to go and
No.
sit and breathe and focus on your heart center and get your breathing this equal length in to out. And yes, it does. It changes. It changes everything when we just sit still and focus on our breath for a little bit. So we can't talk about stress without talking about burnout. And this is almost like a blanket term, and most people will say to you, "Oh, I'm feeling so burned out." But what is burnout really? And I think a lot of us have experienced true burnout, and it's borderline a serious condition. How do we recognize when we are headed to this particular burnout space, and what can we do to pull back from the brink? But firstly, how do we recognize that we're going too far?
So, burnout is basically, we talked about the resources and the challenges kind of being in balance, and that's what happens when we have kind of a state of well-being. And burnout is when the resources go lower and the challenges completely go higher. If you look at a stress curve called the Yerkes-Dodson curve, that curve goes like that. It's like a little mountain, like a what curve is that? I don't know from a maths
Like an
perspective.
arc,
But the initial phase of that curve is actually the positive, what we call eustress. So this is the motivating stress where you go, oh, I'm going to run 5 kilometers, for example. And you feel motivated. You know that challenge and resource are not that much imbalanced. And eventually, over time, you get to the top or the peak of this curve, which is actually where optimal well-being sits. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, actually, of I don't
Yes.
remember now where is he from? Czech, I think it's something
Yeah,
ringing a bell.
Czechoslovakia, yes.
Yes, and he was the psychologist who talked about flow. So when we
Sure.
experience eustress, we get into a state of flow, resources and challenge meet, we're able to be fantastic and we like in that state of really being in our best selves. And in fact, he called that optimal well-being. When we go to that top of that curve and when resources start to decline and challenge starts to increase more than we could possibly meet, we move towards burnout. So stress and burnout are on the same spectrum, but burnout on the
Yes.
right-hand side, whereas engagement comes from eustress and peak kind of stress in inverted commas. Burnout leads to disengagement. It leads to
Right.
the signs of it are a feeling of mental exhaustion. People literally feel, I
Right.
can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this. They feel the second sign or the second kind of big symptom is cynicism. They have this
Yes.
depersonalization to their work. They start to become cynical to their work. What are we really doing here? Why are people doing this? You see, she's like that. She'll always be like that. We're so hypocritical in this organization. People don't live their values, etc. And that's because you've eroded your emotional resources to that level.
Right.
And the last
Right.
one is where our personal efficacy starts to decrease. So we start
Yes.
to become headlined as people are not doing their stuff or getting into performance management or not delivering on the things that we're supposed to be delivering. So it is a spectrum and it doesn't have to happen in that order, but it is something that you can definitely pick up on because you start to notice it in your body.
That's it. Yeah. And I think some of those symptoms, I can speak for myself, but I can also talk from, the clients I work with, is little things like headaches and burning eyes and not being able to fall asleep easily because we're ruminating, waking up with no energy, feeling completely flattened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's these little signs that we tend to ignore. We go, oh, tomorrow it'll be gone by tomorrow, and it never is. It isn't gone until we take action again.
So, you know, the impact of stress, I often put up this one picture. But stress affects every single system in your body, from the tip of your hair to the tips of your toes. So
Yes.
anxiety, depression, irritability, headaches, difficulty breathing, GIT issues, gut issues, heart racing,
Yeah.
palpitations, muscle tension, digestive issues for women, menstrual issues. Hormonal issues, of course. And of course, it also leads to maladaptive behaviors, very importantly. Because when people are unable to deal with the stress, they go, like, what could numb this? Which is, of course, a maladaptive
Exactly.
response.
Yeah.
So, any type of addiction is sometimes related to that. So, whether it's addiction to social media, to your phone, eating disorders, or eating can become an addiction. Of course,
Yes.
substances, smoking, alcohol abuse, and those types of things. And people start to behave in different ways. So they become very moody, they're unable to manage their relationships, they have relationship fallouts, all
Yeah.
sorts of things. So it's a really global impact on the body, and the mind.
Yeah, and just listening to the symptoms, I think everybody is in some form of burnout. Every adult that I come across, at least, is in some along the spectrum dealing with almost every one of these components or some of these components you mentioned. So for anyone listening who, and I'm pretty sure everyone listening will go, I can relate to that. How do I change this? What do I do? What is within my locus of control right now to start doing life differently? What is the first thing you would suggest to anybody with limited resources, let's say, to start thinking different?
You know, I think Before we even go there, I think, the one thing that's important to note is that actually the WHO classified burnout as a workplace phenomenon. It
Okay.
actually talked about chronic workplace stress that's not managed in a holistic manner. And there may be a different
Right.
word to that that they use. So the thing for corporates and for managers in organization is to note that burnout should not be targeted at an individual, because
Right.
the source of it is in an organization. In especially when we,
Interesting.
yes. So the elements of well-being needs to be addressed from a systemic level inside
Right.
organizations, which is around what does the mental health of our workforce look like? What does our engagement look like?
Right.
What are people saying? How much cynicism, how much if personal effectiveness are we noticing? What might be the systemic causes of this? Things like autonomy, personal autonomy, people feeling psychologically safe in workplaces, the aspects of feeling belonging, diversity, equity, and inclusion, are those things being addressed? How are people allowed to grow and develop and really be their optimal selves? We
Yeah.
should not focus on resilience building only. We should focus on
Yeah.
the opposite side of the same coin, which is how do we make our people flourish? How do we give them a sense of
Right.
purpose? Is there a values misalignment between me, my manager, and organization? So,
Yeah.
you and I are very much about root cause. We say, where is the starting? So, when you look at
Yeah.
burnout, we've got to ask the difficult question. Where does it come from? What is causing to happen?
Right.
Because it is a predominantly workplace phenomenon.
Yeah.
And we
Yeah. And very few organizations ask those questions. Where am I helping my people flourish? Very few. So that is, it's a big question.
it's a huge question. And for people themselves, they've got to find out, what is the, how do I level up the resource versus the challenge? Because I mean, I'm actually dealing with so many clients where simply the workload is just way too much. And the question is, if we believe we always have choice, if we believe that we
Yeah.
always can respond versus react, that means we can start to have the right conversations with people. Because when we
Sure.
start to only, say, okay, I'm going to sit and meditate for 10 minutes a day, but actually we're not addressing the root cause, all we're doing is putting the plaster on the broken toe.
Exactly that, eh?
So we got to go.
That is true.
So we got to go and ask the difficult questions, have the courageous conversations. And a very big question, which is the inconvenient question for people, is what do I want in life? Is this the place I belong in? And
Love that.
what is my, what gives me meaning? What makes me feel like I matter? And what is my purpose? Sometimes there's a radical values misalignment between an individual and an organization.
Yes.
Then we have to
Yes.
ask ourselves that difficult question. Sometimes it is the environment, so toxic managers, dealing with workloads, dealing with the lack of autonomy. And then we've got to ask the question, what's in my control here? Can I change this? What are the conversations that I need to have? And then, of course,
Yeah.
the other question is, how do I take care of myself to avoid
Right.
physical and mental breakdown? Because that is what chronic stress and burnout leads to. Cortisol
Yeah.
is a catabolic hormone. It breaks down the body. It's
Right.
neuroinflammatory. It breaks down, it shuts down the brain. It is creates the system of pro-inflammation in our bodies. And it is not a hormone to be vilified, because cortisol is literally, we would die without cortisol. It's the
Yeah.
one hormone we would die without, because we have it wakes us up in the morning, it kind of has a pattern throughout the day, and that's what it's
Right.
supposed to be. But chronically elevated cortisol will break down your body. So,
Yes.
difficult questions, complex answer from me, and yet so many different themes. And I hope that I'm hitting the mark in some way.
Oh, you most certainly are. I think there's so much there to think about. And yeah, we've actually reached our hour almost,
Oh
and
my
we've gone down the rabbit
word,
hole.
I
So yes, lots of food for thought. Thank you so much. This has been possibly the most interesting discussion I've ever had on really thinking about how we manage our own capacity to deal or to be in the world. So Dr. Ashika, where can people find you if they'd like to consult with you?
So you can pop me an email. I'll give you my email, or would you put that on your show notes?
Yes,
Okay.
I'll put it in all the show notes so people can contact you on social media
Yes.
or directly by email via your
Yeah,
website.
you can use my LinkedIn URL, you can use my email, and I have a website which is called www.re-mind.co.za.
Love that. Thank you so much for your time. It was such an enlightening and valuable conversation. I'm sure anyone listening is going to take away some really solid pearls of wisdom. So thanks again.
No, my absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for inviting me. And I hope this was useful to your listeners.